Life can grab a hold of you like captivating strings of color. It is a lesson that four women will learn as they each travel down a journey filled with lies, betrayal, and shocking secrets. Two-time number one Amazon best-selling author Marion L. Thomas brings you her riveting new book, Strings of Color. Critics call Strings of Color real and emotionally charged drama. Get your copy today at Amazon.com or order from bookstores nationwide.
Do not adjust your radio frequency. This is not a test. This is the Artist First Network. Cool.
Across every time zone covering both hemispheres, it's time for Authors First on the Artist First Radio Network. We are truly humbled, everybody. We've been doing this since 1997, and our program is now averaging in 2012. This single broadcast now reaches 82,000 a week. That's an average. Some are over 400,000, a couple over a million. A million! We are truly humbled, and it's all because of you, the listeners out there, listen to and support the many fine authors and bands that come through here. And I guess we need to acknowledge, of course, it's because all the great undiscovered artists and authors and bands and poets and painters and you name it that come through here that in many cases are not allowed to participate in the big money promotions of the literary business. Tonight's author has written a book called Wicked Allure, and she's going to spend the next hour with us. Welcome, Leslie Ferdinand. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
How's life in your van tonight?
Life in the van is fine. A little overheated, but just great.
Leslie is using some common sense tonight, as we've done thousands of these programs over the years, folks. You know, the barking dog, the lawnmower, the all the things that can often go wrong in the house. Well, Leslie has taken shelter in her, hey, a van's kind of like being in a sound booth in some ways.
Yes, it is. And I didn't realize I was low on fuel. Otherwise, I would be sitting in an air-conditioned van. But I have girls, 6, 8, the oldest one, 15, and an adopted son, 19, and they make a lot of noise, along with dogs, a cat, or one dog, three cats, and a fish, and it just conspires against me.
A dog, three cats, and a fish. We have 7 cats that live at the radio station.
Well, you can borrow mine sometimes.
They're all strays. We've taken them all. In fact, there's 2 raccoons in the second floor. We have to have them removed, but well, you've told us a little bit about yourself so far. Well, I like to spend the first part of the broadcast introducing our author to you guys, our listeners out there. Many of you will be hearing about Leslie for the very first time. And so let's talk about you as an individual. Leslie, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in New Orleans.
Oh.
I lived there until 2005 when Hurricane Katrina came in and forced a lot of folks away.
So you were there during the hurricane?
No, we left the day before, me, my mom, and my 3 girls. My youngest daughter was actually 13 days old when we left. I literally got up from bed and went into the driver's seat of the car because I'd been out of the hospital. I think it was like 5 days from the C-section. And and we evacuated to Terrell, Texas, but our family had evacuated to the Houston area, which is where we're at now. We're in Rosenberg. We've been here since 2005, November 2005, and I started a magazine, Inside Rose Ridge, in 2008, but I've been writing with my mom since 1991, and we had 5 books published under our pen name of Christine Holden, and life came about. I had kids, or more kids, I should say, and I had a hurricane. We all had the hurricane that took place, and just things interfered with the writing, so we took a break for a while. And we lost everything, so we were not too sure if we were ever going to write again, what we were going to do again. But eventually we did get back to writing, and we got a new agent, and she is scouting one book around, and this book she released to us to self-publish. So we're just really happy. We're in a really good place right now.
Well, congratulations. 5 books under the name Christine Holden?
Yes, my middle name is Christine. My mother's maiden name is Holden. So that's how we came up with that name. And I'm divorced, and when we were looking for other names, because the Christine Holden pen name has historical and time travel romances attached to it. So we needed another name for our erotic romances. My name is Leslie McGahee. That's my married name. And my mom is Shirley Ferdinand. Well, we thought about Shirley McGahee, but the only downside to that was it wouldn't have sat well with my ex-husband. And so we just went with Leslie Ferdinand.
Well, that's kind of neat. You know, everybody has their AKA, and that's kind of clever. Boy, and what a difference if you've been writing historical and time travel books, and now you're into erotic romance. And by the way, folks, in case you didn't know it, one of the largest growth markets in books over the past 5 years has been exactly that, erotic romance novels. That's a good thing to be writing these days.
Yes.
Well, let's before we get into Wicked Allure, which is what we're going to be focusing on this hour, I'd like to talk a little bit about your very, very first experience. You know, what got you into writing in the first place? I mean, you know, there's all kinds of occupations and things you can do in life. Why did Leslie become an author?
Well, actually, I've always been a reader. My mom read to me from the time I was about 4 months old, so I grew up around books. And she started writing herself when she was about 16. And she was writing a book she started when I was about 8 years old, and she handwrites everything she did back then, and she still does now. And as I got older, I watched her write these books, and I wondered, you know, what is she going to do about them? Am I ever going to see my mother in print? And she said, no, I'm just writing for the fun of it. I like to write. I was like, well, you know what? I'm going to see that we're published one day. And I started writing with her. I actually tried to write. I wrote a book called The Wee Book when I was 4 years old, and it's still on the bookshelf. We actually saved that. We managed save it from Hurricane Katrina.
Oh, that's great.
And I just grew up with it. Now, I did want to become a pharmacist, but that didn't happen. So I just went with the writing. I had to go in the direction that I was being led.
And it's after 5 books later, I'd say you're going in the right direction. Do you know how many people, like I said before, average around 82,000 will hear this broadcast. You know how many of those people would love to have just one book, just finish one book? And, you know, and we were talking about this last hour, how a lot of people, everybody's going to write the next great novel. Everybody, oh, I could do that. Yeah, but how come then so few people actually do that? What I asked this question of the author last hour. What made you finish your work when another author, I mean, this is pure speculation, of course, but your opinion, you know, all the authors whose stuff never gets published because they never finish this, they never take that last step to complete the project, but here you have, and you've done it 5 times.
Yeah, I think it's insecurities for one thing, because we're still insecure. You know, we had Wicked Allure up, and I reread it for, I forgot for what reason, and I saw mistakes in it. So I went and pulled it down and corrected the mistakes. Now, you can't do that when you're traditionally published. Once the book is out there, whatever mistakes are in the book, you have to go with it. But a lot of people just don't write. And if you write a page a day, by the end of the year, you'll have 365 pages, which generally is a completed novel. And when you look at it like that and compartmentalize it more, then it's easier to get done. But if you look at it as a long project and you have to do this and do that, you'll never get it done. You get that first draft written, and then you go back and correct whatever needs to be corrected. No, we can go and make corrections for the next 5 or 10 years. We will never, ever be satisfied with our work. We're always going to look at it and find something wrong with it. But you have to get that first draft done to move to the next step. And that's what I tell anyone, write one page a day, and you'll be surprised at the result.
Well, and folks, the book we're going to be talking about this hour, Wicked Allure, this is a brand new publication. In fact, it's only been out about 3.5-4 weeks, right?
Yes.
Of course, someone listening to an archive, that'll mean nothing. We're taping this program on April 17th, 2012. The book was published March 20th, 2012. And let's tell them right now, before we forget, and we'll mention this later in the broadcast, where can they get the book?
It is available on Amazon.com in print, in paperback. It's at Lulu.com in hardcover. It's available in the Kindle store. It is also available on Smashwords in a variety of ebook formats, and it has just been distributed through Smashwords to the iBook Store, Kobo, Sony, Nook, and I can't remember the other one. Diesel, I think.
And what a great, great, great technology ebooks are. The younger generation, I'm 52 years old. My son's 28, and he grew up with something in his hand, a game controller or you know what I mean? And so all of the new mediums, whether it's his iPhone or his iPad or the Kindle we bought my mom for Christmas, I mean, it's an explosion of ways to read books besides having the copy. And again, when you publish a book as an ebook, it doesn't really cost much to do that. You know, you don't have to stock shelves. It's instant gratification. Just a wonderful time in history to be an author. But I don't know whether you've kept up with the recent stories, but I believe it was just in the last week or two, there's a settlement with the Justice Department involving price fixing on ebooks with iTunes and several major publishers. Did you hear about that?
I did hear about that. I have not followed it too closely. I've been doing a bunch of other things with the magazine and the sequel to this book, but I did hear a little bit about it.
It just rubs me raw that the literature business is taking cues from the record business, the horribly corrupt, absolutely mafia-ridden radio and record business in America. They were leading by example, stealing and ripping off artists for decades. This is not just my opinion, folks. For instance, Sony Music paid, I think, $110 million in three separate settlements because they never paid their artist. Look it up, folks. Elliot Spitzer spanked them good. And when I hear things like this now happening in the literary world, I don't know, maybe I'm naive, Leslie. I try to think that there's good people in the publishing world, that they're not just out there to screw another patron out there. You know, it just drives me nuts. What do they need to price fix the books for anyway? I mean, come on. Except for absolute abject greed. That just drives me nuts. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, and there are wonderful people in the publishing industry, but I don't see a reason for price fixing books, especially with the explosion of self-published writers. And with the price fixing by the traditional publishers, it's just a little bit more of a, I hate to use the word death knell for traditional publishing, but it just puts a little bit more pressure on them. And as I said, there are a bunch of wonderful people in the publishing industry.
Yes, there are, and I'm sorry I paint them with such a broad brush. I'm sure there's probably some great people in the music business. I haven't met too many of them yet. And you know why there's people in the movie business? It's to make the people in the music business look good. You want to talk about a pack of sons of bitches. Excuse my language. Try dealing with people in the movie world. Yes, we have, folks. Yes, we have. It is a mess. And if you anyway, that's a whole other program. But, okay, so it's safe to say, I believe, that this is one of the greatest times in all of recorded history to be an author. Because you don't have to necessarily, like you say, this particular book, well, your publisher released you to do what you want to with it. And, and in the past, that was a death sentence. Hey, go sell the book on your own. Go, like MC Hammer, make copies and sell it out of your trunk. Maybe you'll sell some books. Well, now, when you get turned out to pasture, so to say, now you can go out there and accomplish things. Because of all the new opportunities in the last decade that have come up for authors, there's been some wildly successful authors that have come through these microphones that have no publisher whatsoever.
Right.
And they're going, I need that guy to tell me I've done this and give him my money for what again? Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Well, okay, the book we're going to talk about now, folks, is called Wicked Allure, and it has a terrific, terrific cover. Now, I understand most authors don't really have much say in the cover of their book, but did you on this one?
Oh, yeah, this is an iStock photo, and I got a graphic designer. I chose the photo, and he created the cover for me, and as an indie author, we do have control over our covers. In traditional publishing, you don't really have control over it. And we were just lucky to have some gorgeous covers. But I happen to like this naked woman on our cover now.
Well, she's close to naked. She'd still pass for PG-13. But
her important parts are covered, but she doesn't have clothes on.
She is buck naked, folks. But it's still a picture you could show to anyone, actually. But you know, the old cliche, you can't judge a book by its cover. Well, okay, that's true. But you know what? If people don't like the cover, they may not pick it up, especially if it's in a bookstore. You need something that's eye-catching to get people at least interested in your product. So I think you hit a home run with that. You know, I think most people would see that and stare at that for a few minutes anyway. But, all right, let's talk about this book. And I'm going to open up with a couple sentences here, folks. And I'm quoting, "What does a man say to the woman he betrayed but never stopped loving? What does a woman do when the only man she ever loved hurt her so deeply she feared she'd never recover?" And yes, with that, let's give us a little bit of synopsis of what Wicked Allure is about.
Well, it is about Zachary Steele, who is rather hedonistic. He likes pleasure. He likes women. He likes sex. And he is a former drug addict. He is older than our heroine, Madigan. He did not want to corrupt her too much, so he sort of forced her to walk away from him. The way things turned out, he didn't exactly want them to break up as they did, which you'll have to find the book. You have to read the book to find out exactly how that happened. But then they're thrown together 3 years later, and neither one of them has gotten over the other. And Madigan's mother teams and gets them back together to run a sex club named Wicked Allure for her. And they have to face their feelings for each other, and they have to decide whether or not they really have a future together or if they just want to jump each other's bones all the time, which they do a lot.
Hence the erotic portion of the book. Now, did you say sex club?
Sex club. I sure did.
I thought I was a worldly man. fill me in. Maybe I'm the only person on the planet who doesn't exactly know what that is.
Well, I have never been to one. I've been invited to a couple, and I actually based my club off of what my ex-boyfriends told me about them. And I did not have these. I was not dating these two men at the same time. Let me make that clear. And I did not go. One I broke up with before I had a chance to go, and the other one, we just sort of, it never came about. And they would tell me about the underground clubs where you'd go in and pay a fee and go, and it was like a no-holds bar sex feast. You'd go in and do things that you wouldn't ordinarily do and engage in your wildest fantasies. Now, in Wicked Allure, I took a little bit literary license and made it where it was, the club was a little bit more mainstream. And sex clubs are normally are private. You know, they're not open to the public. You have to have a membership to get in. And that sort of saves it a little bit from being exposed to the public indecency laws and everything. But they're basically underground, as it happens to be. And
I live in small town Ohio. I guarantee you they do not have one of those in our neck of the woods. You know, what if it was public, what would you name that? You know, instead of Applebee's, it'd be Apple Butts or something? What kind of cool names could you come up for retail sex clubs across America, huh? Oh, there was something called Suki's Health Spa, but they shut that down after a while. That was.
Yeah, and I think that was a massage parlor, wasn't it?
Yeah, I can't, you know, I'm not saying that I was actually in one of those places, but that's all I better say about that at the moment.
How explicit you want me to become, because I can still remember some of the conversations I had with these guys, and they would tell me what would go on. I was like, really? Did that really happen? Like, the opening scene in Wicked Allure incorporates cocaine into the lovemaking. And I have never done that either. I listened to a girlfriend of mine as she explained what her boyfriend did to her. And at the time, my mouth sort of fell open. It was like, really? That can happen? It really happened like that? Yeah, I went numb and everything else. I'm like, okay then. Now I'm happy she told it to me, because it was a good tool for the book.
Exactly. You know, authors during interviews are often asked, you know, where did your stories come from? And especially on a topic like this, you know, and especially writing it with Shirley, co-writing this, what were the challenges there on you know, some folks might not be all that comfortable writing an erotic novel with relatives, but, you know, obviously you guys had...
Mother, huh?
Well, I'm sorry, you guys had several books before that, so, I mean, you obviously have a great thing going, but what were the challenges on this book?
Well, in this book, the love scenes are more explicit, and as I said, the first scene incorporated cocaine into the love scene, and my mother, she leaves all of the love scenes to me. She tells me to write all of them, and she sat me down and had a long conversation with me. Where did you get that from? Did you actually do this? Who did this with you? I mean, we went on and on and on, and I'm 40 years old, and she questioned me like I was in high school, wanting to know how I came up with this idea. And I had to explain it to her, you know, and I said, you know, I do have three kids. You have to engage in a sex act to get these kids. So I'm pretty well-versed in sex. And that sort of cut it out right there. She said, that's enough. Okay, thank you. Let's move on.
Well, we used to have a DJ here, old Vicky. You know, she said she wasn't bisexual. She said she was trisexual, meaning, and she'd say, "I'll try anything sexual." So, well, we miss Vicky. She's no longer at the station anymore. But, you know, let's face facts: sex sells. It's on every billboard. It's in every magazine. It's on every television commercial. Sex sells. It's a fact.
Yes.
And without sex, we wouldn't be here. So, I mean, we don't have to dance around it like a bunch of prudes. And as I mentioned earlier in the broadcast, in the last couple of years, erotic fantasy has been a huge, huge boom in the book business. I think you're writing a book at the time when it's the right thing. You know, you're in a growth market, a segment of the literary world that is doing very, very well. When you guys put this book together, were you thinking of a female audience, or did you not care?
We did not really care about the audience. It is a romance, of course, and I have had some men read it before we actually went to print, sort of proof it for me, and they liked the erotic scenes but not the romance, whereas the women prefer the romance, and the erotic scenes they thought were tastefully done, but they like the romance more than or as much as the erotic scene. So there's a market with this book for both men and women, but it all depends on if a man wants to pick up a romance, because there's a slight difference between erotica and erotic romance. In romance, you still want the happily ever after and to find a way to get the hero and heroine together. In erotica, it could go either way. You know, they could walk away. They could end up with another person in the relationship. It could be a bunch of different scenarios. So we just targeted both men and women.
Well, someone the number has come up over the years. I think it's fairly accurate, but about 70% of book sales are purchased by women, a disproportionate amount. So, you know, if you want to hit a home run and you want to write a book that sells, write something for women. Because you're, I mean, just statistically speaking. By the way, I thought of another of name. If we had retail sex clubs, how about Pizza Slut? I don't know why my mind's thinking about this. I don't know. And no, I have not been drinking. I'm drinking water, folks.
I haven't been drinking either. I think some of the sex clubs, I don't quite remember the names of them, but they had pretty mainstream names, believe it or not. it was an interesting concept to me. And that's why I put my heroine in that situation, although you wouldn't think her mother would put her at the head of a sex club. But
yeah, that's a little unusual, don't you think?
Yeah, there's some competition in the book between mother and daughter. And that unfolds as the story goes along. But, you know, we write about things basically that we know about, and sometimes we put in the story things that we may have thought of doing but wouldn't dare do. You know, we just, for one reason or another, we would never, ever do it.
Well, but in our mind, we do all kinds of things, don't we, folks? In the dark, dim regions of the back of your brain there. Hey, if you're just joining us, you're listening to An Author's First broadcast with author Leslie C. Ferdinand. She and her mother, Shirley, have written a new book called Wicked Allure, and it's available everywhere. And, of course, we have all the links provided, whether you're listening to an archive or whether you're listening live right now. You can click right over to our homepage or our archive section. We always make it easy for you to get the books that you listen to on the Artist First Radio Network. Now, we had G.L. Henderson is a program on our station. G.L.'s currently on vacation. He's just retired from the military. And he wrote some erotic fiction. And I am, and what I'm about to tell you is the honest-to-God truth. And a lot of you aren't going to believe me. But this genre is so popular, women, oh, God, I hope he's not going to kill me for saying this on the air. Women pay him to read chapters of his book to him over the phone.
Really?
Women pay him to read chapters of his book to them over the phone. You guys can let your mind go, what's going on there? But now, you know, so have you ever thought, is Wicked Allure going to be available as an audiobook ever, do you think?
I'm not sure about that. I mean, there are independent audio publishing companies that we could go with, but I have not thought that far yet. I want to see how well the sales go with the ebook and the paperback book before I start thinking about that. I would love to see it as an audiobook.
Well, and the cost of audiobooks can be really expensive depending on what company you hire. We've actually looked into that, and we might in 2013, we figured out a way to do that pretty inexpensively. You know, in a radio station and a recording studio is really what, how those things are made. So I don't want to jump the gun here, but we may be releasing a self-service way to do this in the future that is really, really inexpensive compared to what's out there. Folks, you can easily drop $10,000 having a studio do your book. You could drop $20,000, $50,000, $100,000 too, but you know, in today's day and age, you're probably looking at thousands upon thousands of dollars to put out an audiobook, even in the least expensive way possible.
Yeah, you are, because I actually investigated it, and I saw how expensive it was, so I decided that we needed to wait a little while on that. But you know, it was something that I would love to consider in the future.
Well, I was interested to know how you came across to choose the name Madigan for your heroine in the book. That's an interesting name. You don't, at least we don't hear very often around here. It's a beautiful name. You know, you got to pick the names of your characters, and they're going to stay that way forever. You know, how did you arrive on that beautiful name?
It is hard to choose names of characters. When we are writing a new book, we go through several different names, and I have a baby name book, and I went through it and went through it several times, and I saw that name, and we went with Jada at first, and I was like, no, she really doesn't seem like a Jada. It doesn't seem right for her. So we went back and we looked, and we found Madigan in the baby name book. I don't quite remember what her name means right now, but I thought it was a very nice name. I thought it fit with the character and as we portrayed her in the book. So we went with it.
And, of course, Zachary Steele. Now, I have a friend whose name is written exactly the same way. Of course, he pronounces it Stele, but that's just him. but is Zachary, is Zachary someone you know? I mean, I suppose it's impossible to create a character out of thin air and to not draw on your experiences as a human being up to that point. But is there someone in your mind that you may have been focusing on when you arrived at Zachary?
I think there were several different people that I thought about as we wrote about Zachary, because my mom and I both write a little bit. You know, we'll come up with the idea. Sometimes I come up with the idea, and then she will write maybe the skeleton of it, and I put the bone, the skin, and all of the other stuff to it. And when I did my part, I did think about a few people from my past, a couple of people, and I thought about how I felt at certain stages in my life, when a relationship ended, one that I really didn't want to end, when my marriage ended, things like that. And I went with those feelings.
What do you think it is about the human nature, Leslie, that, you know, I could probably testify this to myself, I'm not proud to say, but, you know, sometimes you find that person that you are just so madly in love with, and then you mess it all up. You know, you screw it up somehow. And I'm not necessarily saying that, you know, infidelity, but somehow, what is it in our human nature that seemingly some of the best things that happen to us, many of us just screw the whole thing up? What are your thoughts?
Oh, I wish I knew the answer to that. I might be rich today. I could help a lot of people. I'm not sure. We seem to be programmed to do what's bad for us. We don't choose correctly. When we see something going good in our lives, we want to fix it. And you really shouldn't fix things that are broken. And we have this concept about how things should be, about we each need our own space, our own time, but we have a lack of communication in our society today. And when I was growing up in New Orleans, we knew our neighbors, and because of how fast-paced the world is today, people, you really don't stop and take time to get to know one another. And that hurts relationships as well, personal relationships, working relationships. You know, we need to sit down, slow down, smell the roses, and really talk to each other, get to know our neighbors, find out about each other, and that may help relationships sometimes. And knowing yourself helps a little bit, too.
Exactly. And how many people listening are still, even though you may not be able to admit this, you may be married with children and be well into your years, and you still in the back of your mind, you wish you would have done something different with that one person a long time ago, not knowing how that might turn out.
Right.
You know, how
right.
It's just, I think it's pervasive in society. I think that, you know, I don't know what statistic I'd put on it, but a lot of people have had broken romances over the years. It seems like a very universal topic. I wonder some psychology professor could figure out what it is about humans that mess things up like this. But is there an age group that you would, that obviously, since the subject matter is what it is, you know, what's the cutoff point do you think the youngest reader should pick up Wicked Allure?
18. This should be the youngest reader at this time, 18 years old. No minors should read the book. And, you know, from 18 on up, that's the age group. Because love is universal. Broken relationships is universal. We do have, it is a multicultural book. And by multicultural, I mean the hero is biracial. The heroine is African-American. But it's also people with Caucasians and other ethnicities. And I put multicultural on it because, well, you can see the girl on it. You could obviously jump to conclusions. But I just wanted to be clear about that. And I was so used to describing the book that way to distinguish between the books we wrote as Christine Holden that when I was putting the disclaimer on it about the explicit sex and explicit language and the drug use, I just went with multicultural romance with explicit language, explicit sex, and some drug use. It didn't even occur to me, well, you don't need to put this on here. Just put the explicit part. But we do have that on there, but it is universal for everyone. As long as you're 18 and over, because love is universal, and the feelings that are in that book is universal. We all know what it's like to have a lost love, and we all have regrets about things we've done and maybe should not have done.
Well, and when people talk, like when your characters have a conversation, as a writer, you're free to put whatever words you want in their mouth. And, you know, as opposed to what you might see on a TV show, you know, that has to be careful about what they say, you know, as a writer, you can use all the words you want to use. And I think it's more realistic of the way people are than a sanitized version that's made for, you know, to try to appeal to a mass audience. It's more of the real world.
Yes, it is, because people talk sometimes harshly and with not the nicest words as well. And it is reality, the language that's in the book. And there are some things like we would not put in the book probably because are in a book that we write. Any other writer is free to put whatever they'd like because there are some things that such hot-button issues that it would court more controversy, which may be a good thing. It may sell books. But this is a romance, and we want to go with realistic language and realistic feelings and actions, but sort of tone down on any other type of controversy outside of the sex club.
Well, how do you work out your dialogue? Do you actually walk around the house speaking out loud into the air? You know, obviously you have to discuss things with Shirley, but, you know, do you guys bounce these things back and forth? Do you hear what it sounds like when people are screaming at each other, or is it all done in your head?
Well, I've lived it. I've lived people screaming at each other because I've done a good deal of it. no, she writes her part in wherever she writes that. Sometimes it's in the garden or in her room or at the dining room table, and I'm upstairs in my office at my iMac doing my part, and it just comes from past experiences and conversations that we've had over the years with people or conversations we might have heard. That's what we draw our dialogue from.
Hey, if Wicked Allure was going to be made into a movie, who would play Zachary?
Oh, God. Oh, let's see.
Denzel. Everybody says Denzel. He's getting too old now. It's got to be somebody younger.
I'm thinking about Michael Ealy with the green eyes because Zach has green eyes. I think Michael Ealy has green as gray eyes or something like that. I'm trying to think. See, I did not have a guy out like I did for the book that our agent is trying to scout around for that book, and I can't ever pronounce his name right. Idris Elba, or is it Idris? I think it's Idris Elba. I had his picture plastered on my wall for the other book that we were writing that our agent is trying to scout around. But for Zach, it was just a combination of men in my mind. It was like all rolled into one guy, a collage of men.
Well, and then who would you want to play Madigan?
Let's see. She's not an actress. Nicole Scherzinger, you know, who was on the X Factor, she comes to mind when I think about Madigan. And beyond that, I haven't thought of anyone, which is really bad. It's just people are images that I had in my head, and I guess it wasn't any particular actor or actress, but I have not sat down and considered who would play Madigan or who would play Zach. I guess because it seems like such a far-reaching dream that this book would ever be turned into a movie, I never really sat down and considered it.
Well, and of course it may not never be, but boy, with the what's happening in the movie business is now what has already happened in the record business and is happening in the literature business. It is very inexpensive to put out a movie now. So who knows, maybe at some point in time. But when you sit down to write Wicked Allure with your mom, do you know from the end of the book when you start it, or does that just come along as you develop the story?
No, that just comes along. Our characters sort of talk to us. She said her muse's name was, or is still there, but the muse that she had was Jerome. I don't have a name to my muse. I just go with the flow. The characters talk to me, and it is very, very hard to write a book around the synopsis, which we've had to do when we've sold books just on synopsis in the past, as Christine Holden. That was very hard for us to do because we could not let the book flow as we normally do. Now, some writers have to have a synopsis or an outline to do their work, and it's always been hard for us to do it that way.
Well, from the time of conception till the time it's ready to be published on March 20th, 2012, how long does a project like this take you?
We started writing in June of last year, and we actually finished it in December, I think. And we sent it to our agent. And then we started talking back and forth about whether or not she would scout it around or whether or not she would release it to us. And when we made the decision that she would actually release it back to us for us to self-publish it, we did it within 2 weeks. Because she'd had it, I think, for probably 6 weeks. So we must have sent it to her in January. It took us, then 6 months or so to finish it. And that's basically because of the magazine. And then I homeschool my daughters, believe it or not. So I had a lot going on, and I did not write every day.
Yeah, because, you know, even what you're saying is that here I can't write every day. I've interviewed authors who've taken 20 years to write a novel. 10 years to write a novel, and here you are knocking it out in 6 months. Okay, you're having help from your mom, but still, even at that, that's still a, even if you doubled it, it's a year, that's still a pretty short length of time in which to complete a project and get it out there. Do you go through lots of rewrites? Do you like you said earlier, there's some authors, you know, you could rewrite it forever. It's, at some point in time, you got to say it's done.
Right.
You know, and
yeah, we went through several rewrites with it. It was going in a different direction, and then we stopped writing and let it sit and ferment a little while to see if that's the way we wanted it to go, and then we picked it back up, and we pulled some things out of it that we're actually going to use for one of the sequels because it had too much extraneous stuff in it. It wasn't focused enough on the hero and heroine, and then we went back and put some things back in. So it was back and forth for a while, and that's what took us so long.
Well, and you're already thinking about sequels then, right?
We're already working on it.
Yeah, so, and you know, speaking now of the literary world again, sequels make a lot of sense because if you buy book number one, then purchaser is inclined to follow the series. It's a great marketing tool. It's fun for the reader, and you know, as you can see, many sequels are made all the time. How many sequels do you think there will be?
Well, we are going to do all three Belial sisters, Madigan and her two sisters, Kelly and Brianna, and then we're doing Zach's brother, Dakota. So it's going to be three additional books in the series.
Well, there's your next couple of years anyway, huh?
Yes. I already have the release dates. We will have the next book out and ready, available for sale in October. So, and that will be Scandalous Allure.
Well, you know, you mentioned earlier, and I have to bring it back up because so rarely, and we've been doing this since 1997, folks, so rarely do you hear where an author actually sits down with pen and paper or pencil and paper. And like you mentioned with Shirley, she still writes it out by hand, right? Yes. Does she still do that even to this very day?
To this very day, yes. I get legal pads for her and a bunch of pencils, and that's the way she writes, and that is the way she has written all my life. And I'm sure that's the way she will write for the rest of her life and the rest of mine if I should happen to go before her. But, yeah, that's the way she writes. And I'm the one that types up everything.
And what's your favorite tool? Do you have a laptop, a regular PC, or an iPad? What do you use?
I use a laptop. I have an iMac that I like, but my daughters have sort of taken over that, so I'm relegated to my laptop.
Well, you know, sometimes it's maybe more prevalent with musicians. They'll wake up in the middle of the night and they'll hear a lyric or they'll hear a something. And in the old days, you know, 20 years ago, you'd have to fumble around in the dark or something. And nowadays, you can just leave yourself a voicemail on your own cell phone or a voice, you know, recorder or something to capture an idea that you don't want to lose. Is there any tricks of the trade that you have done, or do those ideas only come to you when you're actually working?
Oh, no, they come to me at all hours of the day and the night. I keep pen and paper handy as well, a little notepad in case I can't get to the computer or something like that. Or if my phone is turned off and I don't want the thought to leave me, I'll just scribble a note down in my notepad and go back to it the next day or whenever I get to the scene in which that note refers to. It comes to you at any time. It can strike you. A thought, an idea, a sentence of dialogue, a description for a character, it does. It comes to you at any time.
And how many great ideas have been lost to, oh, what was that again? You know, I had an idea, and then it slips away. Especially in music where you're trying to remember a music line, and then you hear another piece of music and it gets overwritten or something. I don't know how the brain works in that regard. But with today's modern technology, I think artists are losing fewer ideas than they ever have in the past. Do you guys do, I mean, with all of your books, do you guys go out and do any kinds of book signings or public speakings, things like that?
We did book signings. We have not set up any with Wicked Allure. It has only been out, it's almost a month now, and so we haven't had a chance to do that. With the previous books, yes, we did do book signings. We did do conferences, the Romantic Times Convention in Toronto, and we went to the convention when we were living in New Orleans and the convention was in Houston. We were featured on newscasts in New Orleans and Beaumont and Lake Charles to promote the book. So, yeah, we did promote the book, our book, as Christine Holden a lot. And that's what we're trying to do now with Wicked Allure.
Well,
I just haven't scheduled any book signings yet.
You know, I don't know, maybe it's because I haven't slept in a month, but with a book like Wicked Allure, I hope you're not at a book signing in some, some 300-pound iron worker shows up in a Speedo or something. Hey, we signed my book. I don't, you know, you got to deal with the public. At least we're insulated. There's just, you know, no one can get in the station if we don't let them in. You know, we're pretty safe, but you have to be out there in the real world and come across, or the people with aluminum socks on, you know, it's just like...
Oh, yeah, things like that. You know, I did not give you my mother's telephone number because I have no idea what she would have said, but that happened. We were on live TV, and the interviewer asked me, where do you come up with the love scene? And my mother piped in. She didn't give me a chance to respond. She said, oh, she does research. I'm like, research, really? Love scene? This was live TV, so she added, books? No, she used research, books, I'm sorry, it's not like that. And And I had about 23 men at the book signing the next day. So
oh,
it
yeah.
worked really well.
Hey, that was probably good. Yeah, I was going to say, man, that's good publicity. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Well, like the lady on the cover of your book, the drummer in my band, Donnie, he would take a look at that lady and say, I would drink her bathwater. Now, I don't exactly know what that means, but I know there's something kind of creepy about that. But, you know, when you're getting into the topics that you're getting into, I mean, you can't steer away from it. This is in many circles, it's taboo. I mean, I'm glad it's not everywhere, but there's still some pretty uptight people out there that might get a little whacked out about stuff like this. But I'm glad to see the public is maturing in a way. You know, why shouldn't there be books like this? Anyway, if you love the book, folks, get out there and buy it. If you hate the book, tell your enemies. Maybe they can go buy it. Right?
Yeah, tell them anyway.
Yeah, tell somebody about it if you like it. It's an expression. If you like us, tell your friends. If you hate us, tell your enemies. We're rapidly running out of time at the top of the hour here. And, folks, if you've just tuned in, look, you're going to be able to listen to this again. All of our shows are as archives. There are 30 international websites that steal every single show we put up there. Hey, we give it away to the public anyway, but, oh, well, that's a whole other story. Our guest this hour has been Leslie C. Ferdinand, and her mother, Shirley Holden Ferdinand, have put out this new book, Wicked Allure, book number 5. And book number 6, as you heard, is on the way. And, Leslie, you have to come back when you get the next installment done, and we can do this again.
Oh, yeah, I would love to come back. But let me clear up one thing. This Wicked Allure is book number 1. The other books were completely separate. Completely separate. So Wicked Allure is book number 1, and then Scandalous Allure will be book number 2. And whenever you'd like me to come back, I would love to come back.
Well, you are most welcome here. I've forgotten the other name you were writing under. The first 4 books that you wrote were under a different pen name.
Christine Holden.
Christine Holden.
My middle name.
Of course,
yes.
Of course.
My middle name and my mother's maiden name.
That's right. And so, folks, you can Google that, Christine Holden, and you can find all of the other books out there. But we really like you to purchase a copy of Wicked Allure. The list price is $11.99, and where can they get it?
They can get it at Amazon. It is currently on sale right now for $8.63 at Amazon, at BarnesandNoble.com for $8.63. It's also on Kindle for $3.99. It's at Smashwords for $3.99, and it will soon be in the iBook store on the Nook and BarnesandNoble.com, at Kobo, and Sony and Diesel, all for $3.99 for ebook.
You can't even get a good bag of chips for $3.99, but you can get a great book for $3.99. My, how times have changed, and in my opinion, have changed for the better, and it's changing the better for the authors like you. And everybody else out there, the literary business is no longer just for those fat cats sitting up on the 75th floor ordering their new limos. It's now for everybody out there. That's why we call ourselves Artists First. I want to thank you listeners for tolerating me this hour. I'm Z-Man, sitting in for Tony K. He had a personal emergency this evening, and I was pleased to sit in. I hope I filled his shoes with competence, but with the amount of hate mail I'm getting, Leslie, I don't know if I did such a good job or not.
Oh, are you really getting hate mail?
No, I'm not. I'm just, well, maybe. I never looked. It wouldn't be the first time. You can't put yourself out. You know, but we got to run, folks. We're just at the end of the hour. Leslie C. Ferdinand, Shirley Holden Ferdinand. The book is called Wicked Allure. Get out there and get your copy. And thank you for listeners who will actually do that. Spend $3 or $4 and support these many fine authors that come on here. We are would love to have you back, Leslie, as soon as you're available. You let us know, all right?
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure being here. I'd love to come back.
We'd love to have you. All right, stay tuned, everybody. There's a music special coming up after the CBS News, then Project Urantia and the Artie Kornfeld Show. It's all live coming your way on Artists First Radio. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.